This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. The obituary for independent bookstores has been written many times. First, it was big box retailers like Barnes & Noble, then online dealers like Amazon, and finally the e-reader that were all supposed to make the local bookshop go away. But instead, people began to look for that place that was missing in their lives, a place where ideas and conversations mattered. In Greensboro, that place is Scuppernong Books, with its cafe and unusual events. Brian Lampkin is co-founder of Scuppernong Books, and he joins us today. Brian, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
And I guess pretty soon, happy anniversary, right? We're coming up on 1 year.
December 21st of last year, yeah.
That's great. So what are you, crazy?
Yes.
Tell us about the decision to make a real live human bookstore.
Yeah, and it does take a bit of insanity. You know, you have to believe in this impossible thing that, you know, you've been told over and over, books are dead, at least, you know, the way we wanted to do books. But I think bookstores, independent bookstores, mattered so much to me and to so many people involved in our store that we knew if it was missing from our lives, we knew we weren't that strange, you know, that people really love an independent bookstore.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's not missing from the life of someone who grows up without it, right? I mean, mm-hmm. if you're just happy with your Twitter feed, then you may not know what you're missing, right?
Right, and so I think that's part of our job is to convince people or show people, wow, this is what this place can be. This can be like a center of a city, an intellectual center, right? Even at times a conversational center. It just grows to matter in people's lives.
You have been to a couple of places that are very different from my hometown of Buffalo, New York.
Right.
You were raised
yes.
there as well, and then off to Seattle. I mean, how important were books? And I know you were at Talking Leaves bookstore in Buffalo, which was has been there forever and a real institution in that city.
Yeah, and the owner there, John Welch, is a lovely, lovely guy, right? As booksellers are, Frank. They're good folks.
Right.
Yeah, and I had a bookstore in Buffalo as well.
Yeah.
But in Seattle, it's just a book city. You know, it's a book culture. And you feel that when you enter a city. And it takes independent bookstores to create that book culture. You know, Asheville has it, I think. And I think we're there. I think we're getting there.
Well, it's been a success in Greensboro. And the testament to that is the number of people in the audience who came here to see you. And that's pretty cool. But what's the difference in a place like Seattle where maybe books have been around for a while, where it never went out of the culture, to bringing it back to a place like Greensboro? What's the challenge here?
Yeah, I think the challenge is to, you know, recreate the conversation around books, recreate the intellectual space that allows conversation around books. And I think, you know, I think when people walk in the door at our store, they're not treated like customer or commodity first, right? They're treated like a possible interesting conversation about books. And I think that is a prime and unique distinction of our store.
Also, you know, Greensboro is remaking itself. It's in the process of sort of rising from the ashes in some ways and is doing a good job at that. Is a bookstore sort of part of that, or is it on the coattails of that, or does it play an
integral role? I think we're right in the middle of that.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote an article for the News and Record a month or so ago saying, without the initial work of all these small businesses on Elm Street and in downtown Greensboro, we wouldn't be there. You know, Scuppernong Books couldn't exist unless these people had taken this early risk, which makes no sense to me. Why did these people think it was going to work? But they took the risk, and now it makes sense for us to be there, and I think it just keeps growing. And downtown Greensboro, I think, you know, we're on the cusp of something really quite special.
So you need a critical mass of crazy people in one place to actually, and you have unusual events as well. I mean, it is a place, so since it's a space, you can actually do things in there apart from reading books, right?
Yeah, that's real important to us. And we have a wine bar, so we also just need people in the door, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, we do, you know, I think in November we had 42 events in the store. We would love to get Little Mountain to come play at our bookstore. That'd be great.
Yeah. Well, stuff begets stuff. I mean, I can talk with directly to them, but I'm just thinking in general, if you're young and creative and you have that much talent, you can stay here and try to make a living in Greensboro, or if it's not a cool place, you may have to move on. Well, let me ask you, Stefan DiMuzio, if I may. Stefan DiMuzio is one of the founders of Little Mountain, and I'm going to ask you a question, and that is sort of what does it matter to you? I mean, when you put a band together, do you think about staying, leaving? Are you going to make a career in music for yourself?
With Little Mountain, we thought about staying. Both Nancy and I, we are not from here. We're from different places in the States. I'm from Tokyo. Originally, and really when we first started the band, we were thinking about moving on. I was thinking about moving to Seattle. Funny you mentioned that. But when we decide to stay put, that's when wonderful things happen. And that's when we started writing songs, traveling throughout North Carolina, Asheville, that sort of thing.
And Tokyo is bigger than Greensboro, right?
Yeah, I would say.
I think it is.
I would say it's a little bit bigger.
Why did you decide to stay put?
I guess it all started with, the way my life was going at that time. I'd just gotten out of school. I went to 2 years in UNCG, 2 years at Elon, moved back to Greensboro. Really had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. So I kept thinking, the grass is greener on the other side. We have a couple songs about that, too.
I was going to say, yeah. It's a song title.
Grass is greener, but... when you spend your entire life just planning for the future, you don't get anything done in the present. You just get depressed. And so you create something, that's when you become.
And I just wonder how much the space itself, you know, because you can say, okay, the grass may not be greener on the other side, but it's really nasty here. There is no grass here. I mean, I've been in places where there's no grass. So there has to be something to get going.
Your grass is greener where you water it.
There you go. Mm-hmm. There you go. Or as Irma Bombeck said, over the septic tank. Anyway, so how long have you been here, Brian?
I've been in Greensboro 3.5 years.
Yeah. And when you think about it, you know, again, Buffalo, New York, there's a Rust Belt city that's only seen sort of people leave, right? And then Seattle, this kind of bustling place with a kind of a hipster reputation. And then Greensboro. I mean, sort of how do you see Greensboro? How do you characterize
I see,
it?
You know, great parts of both in Greensboro. You know, the economic struggle of Greensboro really reminds me of Buffalo. You know, the lost industry, the lost services, and it just feels home in some ways that way. I'm partial to that kind of struggle. but you also see what's happening here. You know, and that is great to watch. I was in Seattle at the apex of the grunge movement, right? And you could see that exploding in a city, and to be part of that is exciting. And I feel part of something happening here.
So there is this kind of ethereal concept that is material in the sense that people really do enter the store. They will attend the yoga demonstration tonight at 7 o'clock at the store. They will buy a tangible book. But there is this competition. I can get it so much cheaper and so much easier from those online retailers. What's the challenge? I mean, do you have a chance?
Yeah. And part of our job, I think, is to convince people this is worth investing in, right? The great thing about books is the price is on them. You know, we're not charging any more than that price is on that book. You know, what we can't do a lot of is charge a lot less, you know, and survive. And I think people get that we're offering something really unique and that part of, you know, you're paying for this incredible space that was not just my doing, by the way. There's my landlord is pretty amazing.
A lot of good places. And who saw the vision what this could be? And you got a pretty good cafe in there, too, I understand.
Oh, yeah, it's lovely. There was people in here today eating food from the cafe. So thank you.
That's a partnership. We should work that out so it becomes a regular feature. And authors, too. How important are bookstores to authors?
Well, you know, that has actually been a little surprising to me, how desperate, really, writers are for independent bookstores. You know, it's a different relationship with us than it is with other big box stores. We read their books. We know their books. We talk about their books. And it's this great mutual exchange. You know, they come in and support us. I mean, you can walk into our store and Fred Chappell will be there, you know, having a glass of wine. Or Michael Parker will be in buying the latest book. And so all these Greensboro writers have just embraced us. And we're grateful. And we know that that's a two-way street.
We also know that those online retailers can offer those discounts because a lot of people along the way get paid less, including writers, and so it has an impact on the industry. I mean, we just talked with Congressman Coble about his support for legislation that allowed for copyright for artists to maintain some control, economic control over their own work. You know, how do you see the industry growing if the way to succeed as an online retailer is to squeeze the money from talent? I mean, how's it going to go?
But publishers feel that squeeze too. You know, they know they're in a war with Amazon, right? And they know we're one little cog that that helps save their industry. So we do get a lot of support from the big publishers. We know they're fighting a much bigger battle, but we're a piece of it, and I don't think we're a forgotten piece. And writers help with that so much. Now, the recent battle between Hachette, one of our great publishers, and Amazon was really saved by the writers who were saying no more. You know, it was the writers who stood up to Amazon more than even the publisher, I think.
When you decided to do this, and as it became known that, hey, there's a bookstore going in on Elm Street, what kind of support did you get? Were you surprised at the number of people who sort of came up to you? And
shocked, frankly, if you'll pardon the pun. you know, gratitude. When we opened the doors, the most remarkable thing is how many people just came in and said, thank you for doing this. totally unexpected. Not what you think is going to happen when you open a small business in a struggling city, right? But over and over, people have just been appreciative, helpful, supportive, and we're making it.
You have a Boy Scout. You also sell Boy Scout equipment there. I'm sorry. Helpful, thrifty.
Oh, brother.
You have these cool events all the time, like Wordsomnia. What was that?
Oh, Wordsomnia was, it's amazing, crazy, completely crazy. It was a 24-hour event, 120 different writers. So constant reading over 24 hours. My business partner Steve and I just stayed with it the whole 24 hours, stayed awake the whole 24 hours, and just a thrilling night, day.
And what was happening?
So 120 different writers, from all, Drew Perry, Michael Parker, et cetera, to, just local writers. And they each got 10 minutes to read original stuff. The rule was it had to be something original. So, how many writers an hour? Was it 8 writers an hour or whatever it was? And we'll do it again April 3rd and 4th of this year, if I'm still alive.
What? Well, I think that's, part of the charm of this. We talked to Stefan about Little Mountain, Baby Staying Here, a band that's, by the way, playing kind of traditional music, although all original. So it means it's still alive if people are writing in form that goes way, way back, creating their own music. And replicating it here in the place where it's located.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
North Carolina has more working writers. There are more authors in the state of North Carolina who live here and work here who derive their income solely from writing and nothing else than any other state in the country. This is an amazing state. Most of them live in Hillsboro. that's not true. They live all over the state. But the point is, they stay. There's a place. There's a thing about being in the space. Writers can write anywhere. Musicians can play anywhere, and they need audiences. All of them. So there's really something about creating a space that, and when you're writing about place, and when you're writing music about place, it needs to be sort of maintained and evolve at the same time.
Yeah, we've been mining that Hillsboro gold. Lee Smith and Hal Crowther were in last week. Alan Gerganis is coming in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, that's great to have all these people so close.
It's good stuff. So do you see it? I mean, you talked about the challenge, the effort that you're making. Can you win? Can bookstores really survive?
I think one thing that we're not winning. We're not in it to win, even. Like, our ambitions are small. And I think that's a comfortable place for us.
But, I mean, survival is winning, right?
Survival is winning, yes.
So that's what
right.
I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are there groups now of independent bookstores, or are there ways in which you're working together as independent bookstores that are helpful as well?
Oh, yeah. There's a SIBA, the Southern Independent Booksellers Association. In Asheville in February, there's the ABA conference that we'll be at. And these things matter so much. And not because the conversation is so good in the hotel bar, with fellow booksellers and writers. It's always the best. So, yeah, like the children's author John Green will be in Asheville because he supports independent bookstores so vibrantly. And if your children haven't read John Green, you should do so or have them do so.
What's going on tonight? The Dynamic Dozen, 12 accessible yoga poses. That actually sounds kind of dangerous.
I will not be participating in the one thing. Yeah, we sometimes have no idea what to expect. We book these things and we feel good about them. And I'm glad Tim's coming tonight, but I'm not quite sure what he's going to do. So
we talked about Wordsomnia. What's the weirdest event that you've done at the place, do you think?
Well, I really enjoyed our Banned Books event on Banned Books Day in September, where we put a soapbox outside the store and all day, from 10 to 6, people just read from banned books. So they're out there exclaiming to the masses. Yeah. And sometimes that got a little uncomfortable.
The sad thing is that you can actually spend a day reading books that have been banned.
We barely touched it. Yeah.
That's kind of the sad part.
Yep.
Well, I want to wish you the best of luck, Brian. What a pleasure to meet you. Brian Lampkin, co-founder of Greensboro, Scuppernong Books. Tonight, as I said, you can hear author Tim Kine read from his book, The Dynamic Dozen, 12 Accessible Yoga Poses. Scuppernong Books. Is he just going to read, or is he going to make you do funny things
with
your body?
I think he's going to make people do funny things.
I think you ought to show up just to watch in case you're not limber enough. Anyway, that's tonight at 7 o'clock. This is our program. Thank you so much for listening to The State of Things. Our website, stateofthings.org. If you missed any of the events, it's all posted there. We'll have some photos as well. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Our intern, Alex Curley. Robin Copley is the technical director. Al Wadarski with us today. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I want to introduce Little Mountain to you. Stefan DiMuzio is on violin and vocals. Nancy Watson on percussion and vocals. Andre DiMuzio on acoustic guitar and vocals. And Lauren Baselli is also doing some backup vocals. They're going to play us out, but first I'm going to tell you that you're listening to North Carolina Public Radio, which is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. This is the state of things. Thank you very much. Here's Little Mountain.
I hit the road not knowing where it goes, just following my coffee-craving nose, looking for a place nobody knows, looking to escape my worries and my woes. I'm sitting by a fireside with you, paper cut out mountaintops in view. It's cold as hell but warm as heaven too, and this golden bourbon makes me feel brand new. It's everywhere you wanna be and then, no matter how much time I have to spend. I wish this time with you would never end. Asheville, I can't wait to see you again. Just in time to see the autumn leaves, the very last few clinging to their trees. And what was there before I couldn't see? A clearer path is laid in front of me. No matter where my heart and spirit roam, there's something here to call my very own. Just knowing that I'll never be alone. Asheville, I can't wait to call you my home. Asheville, I can't wait to call you my home. I'm everywhere I wanna be.